Melisse arrived in the Caribbean after a transatlantic crossing with no yachting background and no plan. Within 2 years, she had her yacht master. Within 20, her master 3000. Along the way, captains told her she was too old. Boats told her they couldn't have a female on the deck team because it would ruin the vibe. Melisse is now a captain with over 2 decades in yachting, a Master 3000, and a reputation built entirely through the standard she held herself to and the network she quietly, deliberately built. In this conversation, we talk about what it actually took, the tickets, the timeline, and the moments where she had to back herself when no one else was going to. If you're a woman on deck trying to figure out if the path forward exists, this conversation is evidence that it does.
Welcome to Yachting International Radio, Melisse. What a pleasure to have you here. We are all about girls on deck today because the reason why I really want to do this is that not only are you respected in the industry, but I have clients, females who are on deck who are struggling. I feel from what I've heard is that it takes a lot longer for them to progress up the ranks than it does for their male counterparts. So I'm very curious to learn about your journey so that we can extract some gold nuggets that perhaps some of these girls on deck can apply to themselves. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Corinne. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's an honor to do that and my absolute pleasure. Mm. Yes, it's not always easy. And yeah, I'm happy to share whatever I can to inspire and help the rest of the upcoming crew.
Fantastic. Thanks, Melisse. So when did you first realize that you did certainly want to pursue a career in yachting and climb the ranks and be a captain?
It somewhat came by accident. I actually enrolled in yachting by accident after already having done a transatlantic, not knowing anything about yachting, arriving in the Caribbean and meeting a captain. And after more or less a year of working on yachts, I realized that I'd found a new career and that maybe it would be good if I would get some tickets. And actually, I guess on the second boat I was on, when I first started, it was two relief jobs. One was as a little bit of everything, chef, mate, accountant, purser on a smaller boat. And the second boat was a 118-foot Bonetti, mm-hmm. where I was the chief stew, mm-hmm. with a one-day handover. I'd never heard of using vinegar as a cleaning agent before. And while I was on that boat, I didn't so much as decide that I wanted to be a captain, but I promised myself if I was ever going to be a captain, this was not how I was going to run my boat. Hmm. It was basically, we were 7 on board, and as soon as cocktails were being served, the captain, the engineer, and the mate, and the deckie would sit on the bridge watching videos and leave all the guest stuff to us, chief stew, second stew, and the chef.
So no team spirit.
And when you would ask for help, they would go like, oh, I'll explain that to you tomorrow. Then you know how to do it. And I was like, no, that's your job. We've got an offer on our hands. And I promised myself I would never run a boat like that.
Isn't that quite common, though, in our industry? I would say in probably poorly managed vessels where you see that separation between interior and deck, and it's almost like, that's not my job.
I think there's two divisions on that. One is a little bit of sailboats. On sailboats, I haven't been on any sailboats, however big, whatever the size, where it was like, oh, it's not my job. It's always a team job, and if you need to jump in, you jump in. You know, as captain on sailboats, I've done beds and heads, served, done dishes, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
I think on the smaller motorboats, you sort of have to still do the same. I think where it gets different is when you've got more crew and it becomes more of a department thing.
And it shouldn't be that way. Yeah.
I don't think so.
So, Melisse, how long did it take for you to get your captain's license?
Not that long, actually, because as soon as I realized that this was a new career for me, I did my yacht master, mm-hmm. and that was back in 2005. Mm-hmm. I'd done 2 transatlantics by then, lots of sailing. I'd had a year in the industry, but on smaller boats, sailing yachts, And then that same year, I did my Yacht Master Ocean and started working as captain or mate on slightly bigger boats, a little bit captain and mate, depending on what was needed. And that was back in 2006. And then 5 years later, in early 2011, I thought it was a good idea to do my MCA 200, so my Master 200 MCA. And initially, for me, that was it. I was like, I want to work on sailing boats. A 200-ton sailing boat is plenty big. And didn't really do any further ticket development until 2014, when I was like, if I want to stay in the industry, I'll need to up my tickets to my experience. And it then took me 2 years to go from just Master 200 to Officer of the Watch 3000. And then another, so that was in 2018, and I got my 3000 in 2022. I did my Master 500 in 2020 because my tickets were going to run out and I had not enough time and didn't want to take the risk of it running out during the summer. And that was a good point because then we hit COVID and I would not have been able to do it. So,
yeah, lucky.
Yeah. So the initial ticket took me 2 years. And then getting to my Master 3000 from the beginning of my career, almost 20 years.
And you were, while you were studying for these tickets, you were working on super yachts on deck as chief officer?
Yeah, chief officer and captain.
And what size?
When I started my Officer of the Watch tickets, I was working on a 70-foot sailing boat, which was funny because you need to do BA kit training for your TRB, for your training record book. And we didn't even have that on board. And so I went around the marina in Athens with the big motorboats asking if anybody had any fire drills going. And one of them had a new chief officer and said, like, we'll run a fire drill specifically for you.
Oh,
amazing. That was really nice.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So have you been a bosun before? Do you ever
No, it's as the mate on smaller sailing yachts or even as the captain, you need to be doing everything.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're actually deckhand, bosun and mate rolled all in one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you face any challenges as being a female in a male-dominated industry?
Funnily enough, no. Not at the beginning. When I worked on the smaller sailing yachts, nobody questioned whether I should be there or not. Yeah. They were all like, you're good. You can come work on my boat. And it wasn't until sort of 2016 when I started looking for bigger boats where I got people telling me that I was either too old or that they couldn't possibly have a female on the deck team because that would ruin the vibe.
And how did you confront that? How did you process it and overcome it?
It made me question whether I wanted to be in an industry that is so shallow. And then I was like, yes, because I really enjoy working on boats. Like the saying goes from one of the books, there's nothing quite so fun as, liberally translated, there's nothing quite as fun as pottering about on boats. And I was like, I'll just have to make sure that whatever I can do to make it different, I can do. And to do that, I have to be really good at what I do, which I already was, and maintain my own ethics and my own morals and my own rules and standing.
So did you ever have to stand up to authority? So someone that was more senior than you that perhaps put you down, said one of those comments to you?
Not specifically, no.
Okay.
No, I've not had it directly.
So it was more junior crew or crew on your level that would make those comments?
No, this was applying for new jobs. This was replies that I was getting on paper and back from captains from boats.
Oh, gosh.
I was like, well, that's not happening on my boat.
Do you feel that now this has become a it's almost like this flame within where you want to encourage and empower other females in the industry. And not only that, I can hear that you're very passionate about leadership and doing the right thing and perhaps inspiring others to do the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Not necessarily only for girls, but I think it's important that we all get the same chances. And whether it's boys or girls, but it's just sometimes harder for girls to even get your CV read because some boats will have the policy we don't do girls on deck.
What are they losing out on when they don't hire someone who is more than competent, but just simply female?
They lose out on a different perspective. They lose out on an amazing crew member because generally to get where they are, they've had to work twice as hard and so be twice as good. And just diversity. It's just a different point of view. And I've noticed with, especially with bigger deck teams on motorboats, but also on sailing boats, if you've got a girl in the team, it sort of etches the boys on a little bit. Mm-hmm. They become better themselves because you don't want to lose out to a girl, obviously.
So there's a driver of motivation there. So what would you say to not only these captains that turned you down because you were female, but the industry at large? Where are we now and where would you like to see ourselves as an industry in terms of equality, gender equality?
I think a lot of it is out of fear. Some of it is out of laziness or not wanting any hassle. A lot of the time you see due to cabin arrangements. And yes, that is a requirement in the MLC. But there are also ways that you can deal with that. As long as everybody is aware of it before you get on board and they're all happy with it, there's no issue with it. I get the feeling it's sometimes used as an excuse. And that's a bit of a pity. I think that we should be more open as an industry, not just to gender equality, but to any equality.
Absolutely. What would you say to a female crew member who has been turned down because she is female or she's not progressing up the ranks because she's female and just experiencing that difficulty and let down? What would you say to them?
Don't let yourself be discouraged. It might take you longer, but you will make it. Mm. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it because you can. Mm. I'm living proof of it. And talk to other people about it. See what you can do. Make as many contact as you can. Mm. Don't be shy about yourself. It's something I've had to learn a little bit. I was 20 years in the industry and didn't really had a little network, but not very big. And it's important to network. It is, because most of my jobs have come through my network, not through an agency, not through applying for it. So don't be afraid to talk to people.
Yeah, great advice. Did you have a mentor yourself as you were climbing up the ranks?
Not a mentor as such, not a constant factor, but there's been several people that have been instrumental in me going forward. Mm-hmm. One of them was Mark Smith, who when I was working in St. Martin on smaller boats, said like, Mylise, you need to get out of here. You need to get on this race and you need to start running racing boats. At the time, I was trying to make it as a racing career. And he spurred me on and I did get on that race. It was really hard, but I put all my work in it. I knew all the captains on the race. I'd written to all the captains on the race. I went to several regattas in the Caribbean on my own dime to go and see them and let them know, like, if you've got any openings on the race, let me know. And an opening opened up and they called me. And so, he's been instrumental. There's been several people, Carol Benbrook, who's another female captain, who's been very supporting and helpful. My now husband, and we started working together on a boat. He taught me lots and he's one of my biggest supporters. He's good enough that we shared captaincy on the 70-foot boat. We would have one of us be the captain 1 year and the other one would be the captain the next year. That was quite amazing.
Good partnership. Any words that your mentors imparted that stuck with you?
Don't rush into anything. Be really good at what you do. Be true to yourself. And always be honest.
Love that. Malit, big question here. What has been your hardest moment as a captain? And what did it teach you, that particular moment?
There's different occasions of hard moments. I've had a few hard operational moments. We lost our brother, Mid-Atlantic. That was hard, but you can just deal with that. There's been a few moments where I've had to tell owners that, no, we're not going out, or no, I cannot deliver the boat because of weather. And one of the first ones was actually on my first offshore passage from Bermuda to the States as a captain. And once you've done that once, it becomes easier because you know you're right. You know you're right. You know it's not safe to go out. And I've gotten to a point where if that's what they want to fire me over, fine.
So be it.
So be it. But
to navigate.
But looking back, the hardest thing is always the crew. It's finding the balance between running the boat operationally and still finding time to support your crew, to get the best out of them, to try and find enough time to help them with developing themselves, developing their skills. And you have to watch out that the operational doesn't become the priority and you don't have time for that anymore.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We spoke about a book earlier. Have you read any leadership books that you recommend to our audience that has helped you navigate leadership specifically?
Not so much specific books. It's more like specific people. Simon Sinek, for example.
Yes.
He's a great guy to listen to. And just general books. Some of it is not been leadership's books, but for example, Andre Agassi's biography hasn't taught me so much about leadership, but how to trust yourself and rely on yourself and how that makes you a better person and therefore a better leader.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so final piece of reflection. Is there something that you are thinking about planning or currently doing where it's more, I would say, essentially you leaving a legacy behind? Is there anything that you would like to give back to the industry or an impact that you would like to make?
I would just like that people get inspired by what I do, and that because, you know, you can dream big, and when you can dream it, you can do it. But it's so much easier to have the dream if you can see it. And I'm a firm believer in Maya Angelou's, you can't be what you can't see. And if just me being out there and advocating helps anybody, male or female, to continue doing what they want to do and to make a career out of this that is super fulfilling, that's it. In the beginning, I thought I had to do something really big and, you know, start a charity or do something, or I've found that mentoring a few people, helping them out, and just doing what I do has touched quite a few people without me realizing. This last Palma Boat Show, I spoke to a fellow captain who has a female mate on board, and he knew me. And I was like, okay. And he said, like, please keep doing what you're doing. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not doing anything special. And he's like, no, you are. Just do what you're doing. Be you, and people will notice.
Oh, that's amazing, Marlies. And I guess this is why you're here today. Like, you are having a ripple effect. And unfortunately, there are not too many female captains that I know, but I think it's, you know, holding that beacon high and leading the way. And as you said, showcasing that it is possible, anything's possible, as long as you can visualize it. And that's my biggest takeaway from today. Thank you so much, Marlies, for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Corinne. It's been really nice speaking to you. And I hope together we can make this work and get the industry a little bit more diverse.
Absolutely.
If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month, with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.